On the other hand, you have the enzalutamides, which are going to block the binding of testosterone to the androgen receptor and also dihydrotestosterone. And then you have newer compounds coming in that'll be doing similar things. So these are, in a way, older concepts. I don't think from a conceptual perspective, they're completely new. Ketoconazole, for instance, was an androgen synthesis pathway inhibitor, and bicalutamide and flutamide were things that would block the androgen axis. So from a concept perspective, these are not totally new. They're just really better drugs. They're much better drugs than what we used to have.
So, Tom, can you take a shot at explaining what the difference is between how enzalutamide works and bicalutamide, the anti-androgen that a lot of people are more familiar with?
Sure. So we call these drugs anti-androgens or androgen receptor blockers, and the words make it sound so simple, but that's not exactly what happens at a biologic level. Many of these agents, similar to some of the hormonal agents in breast cancer, can have both agonist and antagonist actions. And bicalutamide, which we rely on to be an antagonist, also has some paradoxical agonist activity. So one difference between the two drugs is that, at least to date, for enzalutamide, we've not seen any evidence of any antagonism of the androgen receptor. One possible explanation for that is that, unlike bicalutamide, enzalutamide binds the AR, the androgen receptor, in the cytoplasm and either prevents or substantially reduces its ability to move into the cell nucleus where the DNA resides and where androgen receptor and other nuclear receptors regulate the expression of genes and do what they do. So it blocks it outside of the hot zone, if you will, of the nucleus and doesn't let it go in there.
One other thing I'm going to do, I have accumulated a list of questions that we've received from medical oncologists about prostate cancer, emailed in or at our symposia that I've got a whole list of. And Matt, one of them I thought was interesting related to this question. If CYP17 is required for androgen biosynthesis, why do we need a GnRH analog with abiraterone?
That's a good question. One would wonder if you could use abiraterone acetate monotherapy to achieve pronounced or profound hypogonadism. Problem is that there's feedback. This is a complex regulatory system, and there's feedback. And so you would require increasing doses of abiraterone to achieve consistent low testosterone levels in an intact man, and that would diminish the therapeutic index of the drug. So it's not a desirable approach.
So, William, corticosteroids are needed with abiraterone, maybe or maybe not with a new lyase inhibitor or terranol, and aren't needed with enzalutamide. Can you talk about the biochemistry behind this?
So the androgen biosynthesis inhibitors block two lyases that basically, in the pathway to develop the adrenal sex steroids, when you block those two enzymes, there's a feedback mechanism that increases the amount of cortisol made in the alternate pathways. And that, unfortunately, leads to complications like hypertension and abnormalities in potassium metabolism. So in order to overcome that, actually using supplemental steroids like prednisone seems to abrogate that response. With orterenol, there's some evidence that maybe that feedback mechanism is less of an issue, but in fact, in the end, the addition of supplemental steroids does, in fact, reduce the risk of hypertension, for example, and other mineralocorticoid effects.